This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Quinn on the other side. Quinn back to Power. 7 seconds to go in the power play. 14 in the period. Power shot scores! Alex Tuck was in front of the net. And the Sabres in overtime with a power play goal win the St. Patrick's Day showdown 3-2.
Dan Dunleavy on the call last night. Sabres with a nice 3-2 overtime win against the Boston Bruins. They've now won three of their last four. And it's funny, the teams they've beaten here in the three of the last four. Edmonton, Vegas, and Boston. Now, this is not the same old Boston Bruins. We get that. It's still nice to beat Boston. They're still fighting for a playoff spot. In fact, that was a big game for the Bruins last night. They only get 1 point. If they had gotten 2 points, they'd be only a pair back of a playoff spot. They're now 3 points back. And the Rangers, who they're chasing, still have a game in hand. So Boston's not trending well. All right? Boston, by the way, they're actually, you know what their goal differential is? You know what the Sabres is versus the Bruins this year, their goal differential? Here's a team in the Bruins who have 69 points. The Sabres have 60. 31 wins. Sabres 27. But you know what the goal differential is? 30 points. I'm sorry. Sabres have 27. Want to guess? What's the Sabres goal differential this year?
Is it close to zero? Like, no, close to even, I mean?
It's minus 23. Not great, okay. But it's not, oh my God, horrible.
Right.
Bruins are minus 35. That's like the third worst in the conference, behind only Pittsburgh, which is actually minus 48, and the Flyers minus 42. But it just goes to show, and if you look at the Sabres schedule, you look at the way that their season has unfolded here, I mean, I get it was a 13-game losing streak. But Josh, I mean, if they had found a way to win four games, four out of 13. Now, they did get points in three of those games. So let's say they win those three. They get an extra 1 point in each. That's 3 points. Okay? Now you're up to 63. And let's say you just win three more games, two more games. You get up to 67. Now you're within 5 points of the Rangers, and you'd have two games in hand.
And who knows who you beat in those games, too, because it could be teams that are ahead
of you. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Like, you got to think about that sometimes. It's a lot of what-ifs, but like...
I mean, this is what the season comes down to, is literally what happened at the end of November through December.
You can... The last three seasons all have that big losing streak. This one just happened to be bigger than most. Like, the year they missed by 1 point, they had an eight-game losing streak in there.
That's exactly right.
You eliminate two or three of those losses, and it changes things around drastically. This year, to me, kind of has felt like that year because at times, not for the whole season, but at times you've seen this team can score 8 goals a game, but then they're also giving up 6 or 7.
Well,
it's crazy. Like, think of the Colorado game. They were up 4-0 in the first period, and then they collapsed.
I remember that game. That was actually, we were at the game we had a birthday party for Max, for him and his buddies. They were all there, and the kids were going crazy. Every goal was the best. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening right in front of us.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right? That was a devastating night.
I remember I didn't see the first period and I was like, oh, this is great. And then I turned it on halfway through the second, and then everything went downhill and I was like, I'm never watching a hockey game again.
That was part of the...
That was like the third or fourth loss, I think.
Yeah.
In the 13 games.
I was at, in San Jose, we went out to San Jose, I was at the final win before that streak. Then they go on that 13-game losing streak. Here's why I bring it up, too, and Josh is right. You hear Jeremy and Joe always talk about they just can't get the scoring and the goaltending to match up in a year. One year, it's great scoring. Where's the goaltending? Next year, it's great goaltending. Where's the scoring? That was last year. We're kind of back to 2 years ago. They're scoring goals, for the most part. Where's the goaltending? Now, special teams have not been good this year. We know that, for the most part. But the reason I'm bringing it up is, I mean, yes, you can't just take away a 13-game losing streak, of course. But outside that 13-game losing streak, this team, on the front end of that and after that, has played pretty much playoff hockey and been right involved in the playoff mix. And then we get to this part of the season, and they're starting to win games, and it feels really good, but I'm really trying to avoid feeling too good about it because it doesn't matter. I love what they've done the last couple nights, games, this weekend against Vegas, and then last night. Dialed in last night, watching it. And it felt like it mattered. It felt like it meant something. And it doesn't.
I feel like right now the thing that does matter a lot is the mood of your captain. You know, yeah. Obviously there was the whole report where Paul Bissonnette comes out and says, oh, Darlene wants out, whatever. And, you know, Darlene himself squashes that. So, like, that's not, you know, as bad as it could be. But there's definitely something there. Like, there's definitely thoughts of, hey, you know, we got to start to turn this around. Like, your captain is calling for it. You know, he had a meeting with the GM and wants to figure things out. So it's this part right here is important to not let that snowball into something big.
Right? By the way, he is so good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
the way he's played too, right? I mean, like, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. He's been awesome so far.
Yeah, he really... Owen Power steps up and plays well.
I think...
Has a, what, three-point night last night?
Mm-hmm. I think in the next, you know... There's probably a lot of people out there that disagree with this, but I think in the next about year, we're going to see him take the same jump Darlene did.
Let's hope.
Think about how
That's
we all talked about Darlene 3 years ago. A lot of people were saying the same stuff they are right now about Power, and now look at Darlene.
But you're doing it. You're doing it to me. You're making me think that they're going to be better. No, and that's okay. That's the problem.
I know. It's tough.
I'm conflicted.
It's funny. I was texting my friends last night. This is their obligatory run in March.
Yes.
Every season you have this run in March where it's like, hey, look, this is great promise for next season. And then you play yourself out of a top five pick, and then what? Then nothing changes. Right? Like, because that's the thing. Right now, if they keep on this pace, they're going to be out of the top three. And everyone in the NHL draft so far has been saying the top three are the best. And there's a steep drop off from third to fourth. So I'm not saying I want, you know, a tank or anything. But if you're going to be there, you might as well be there. Like, that's where I'm at. And it's tough because I don't want more people to get upset in terms of players. Because we, as, you know, the fan base, are already upset. We can't really get any more upset. And I just don't want to see the players start to turn on each other again. I don't want to see that next cycle of Eichel and Reinhart and all that.
Listen, I get it. I think that the issue for me is I get caught up in that just as much because I love to see it. It makes you feel good. And then you realize it doesn't matter. And then once you get to the offseason, there's going to be changes anyway, and it doesn't carry over. You think it does. You want it to. It doesn't. They are... starting a four-game road trip. Last night was the first of those four games in Boston. They are in Utah, at Utah, on Thursday night. That's a 9 p.m. Eastern start. Then they go this weekend to Minnesota, an afternoon game, and then Winnipeg, another afternoon game. I'm not expecting them to win three in a row. Let's just play a game, though. Let's just play a game and say they win three in a row, and you get 6 points. Now we're sitting here with, I don't know, 15 games left? A little less than that, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, about 15 games left, and you'd be about 7 points out. It'd be way too much still, but we'd have this, oh my God, could they make this heroic run again? And maybe they're only playing as well because they don't have that pressure that it doesn't matter. Man.
Right, but if you want to be a playoff team, that pressure is going to be there.
Yeah.
That's the tough part.
Let's see what Mark in West Seneca has to say about it. What do you think, Mark?
Well, guys, I'm a Buffalonian. I'm 67 years old. I was at the last Buffalo Bisons game at the Odd the season before we became the Sabres and we won the Calder Cup as a kid. I have been a lifelong Buffalo Sabre fan. Been through through the first 50 years of my life, I never missed a game. Never missed a game. And to see what has happened, and I always say my team, because I love the Bills. Don't get me wrong. I had seasons for 30 years. But my true love is hockey. Been in it my whole life. Played it, coached it, the whole nine yards. Played a little bit in college. Like many people in Buffalo, this is a smart hockey market. When you go out into the community and you start talking about people with people about the Sabres, 9 out of 10 really know what they're talking about. And to see what has been going on with that team is really, really sad. And I put this solely at the feet of the Pegulas. Solely. They have a long history since they bought the team of not hiring anybody with substance that has any resume of ever building anything. Tons, one after another, first-time GMs, one after another, first-time head coaches. And I'm not saying some of these people weren't talented or that they shouldn't have had jobs within the organization, but they have been crying for somebody who has a history, at least of once, building an organization from the hockey department, building an organization that has actually challenged to win the Cup. And I have always said, the people they hire and their attitude seems to be, from the outside looking in, they're talent gatherers. We're just going to keep going and getting the best talent we can see, and we're going to throw it against the wall, and hopefully it forms a team and it sticks. They have no idea how to build around players that are really talented. How long has Dahlin been with the team now? 7 years? They still haven't found a defenseman or even decided what kind of defenseman to put alongside them.
Yeah, I get it, Mark. You know, listen, I mean, I gotta run here. I gotta get to a break. I appreciate it, but I think at this point we had a big question. I think over the last few months of does Kevin Adams survive this season? I think at this point it's pointing to yes, right? I mean, they could still make a change, but I'd be pretty surprised. They kept him through the trade deadline. He made that decision to make the trade and trade away Dylan Cousins, get Josh Norris. It feels like everything's pointing towards him getting, you know, one more year. He's in year number 5 right now. So I don't think you're getting much change at the top. I think Lindy's back as well. You never know with Lindy at his age and the fact that he said that he was deciding even doing it this year. You know, does that change at all? I'm not sure, but I don't think you're getting many changes in that regard this offseason. A lot of RFAs, a lot of guys to figure out here. We'll see about how all that turns out for the Sabres.
It's time to talk Sabres hockey. Big changes at KeyBank Center. Let's hear all about it. Coach Lindy Ruff is being brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. And by Catholic Health, the right way to care. Now, with head coach Lindy Ruff, here's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
All right, good morning. Sabres win last night, 3-2. Overtime win over the Boston Bruins. 3-2 they win, and we'll check in with Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff in just a few moments. Win for the Sabres. They are in the standings still in the basement of the Eastern Conference, but crawling out a little bit in the overall league standings. They are still fourth from the bottom, which means they would pick in the top 5.
They might. They've been in last in the East since mid-December. They might actually climb out of that by the end of the year.
And past the Flyers, who are falling apart.
Yeah. They are four back of the Flyers with 3 games in hand. They're also 6 back of Pittsburgh with 3 in hand.
It is funny to say, like, the Flyers are falling apart. The Flyers, I believe the Flyers are the only team in the league in the last 10 games with fewer points than the Sabres. I mean, the Sabres had a losing streak at the beginning of this, and they've won 3 out of 4 here.
You could see, possibly, both former Sabre GMs getting fired this offseason. Briere in Philly. I mean, this
both
is
former
year,
Sabres that
sorry,
are GMs.
That are GMs is what I meant. He's in, I think this is year 3 for him as general manager, and it's gone horrible.
And Drury.
And Drury in New York has gotten heat. They have climbed into a playoff spot, so maybe that's a big determining factor, but both of them have had some heat on them.
Yeah. 803-0550, our phone number, and 1-888-550-2550. Sabres win. We go to the Western Hotline to speak with Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff, who joins us now. Lindy, good morning.
Morning. How are we doing, guys?
Not too bad. St. Patrick's Day in Boston. A win, which is always nice, but you know, you're in almost the center of the universe for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I think you're right. There was a lot of green here when we bussed from the airport in, and there was a lot of green again yesterday at the game.
had to be a good feeling to stack wins and three out of four now for your team. Have you, Rasmus Dahlin made a comment like feeling like the vibe or something has been figured out. Do you get the sense that something has been different in the last week or so?
Well, we're winning hockey games. So that's the most important thing. I think when you talk about being in tight hockey games, we're finding ways now, instead of losing games, we're finding ways to win games. A real tight game last night, a game where, you know, I thought their goalie made a couple great saves in the third period, and we stayed around and played a real smart game, managed the puck really well. I think those areas, we are coming together, where we're trying to stay strong defensively first and then look for opportunity to win a hockey game.
Did you have to play, or did the team have to play any differently yesterday when you're missing multiple skilled guys in the lineup and maybe some players, especially, you know, power play? Krebs gets the goal, that some guys maybe would be playing roles that they don't often play?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's an opportunity for some guys. I thought the Krebs power play goal, a great play by that unit. They moved the puck around quick. They opened up the hole. A great shot. It's something that I've been encouraging Peyton to do more is when you get inside that opportunity, not defer to trying to pass. He got rewarded with a great shot. And then, the overtime power play goal, those guys got on the ice and, you know, Tuck was around the front of the net in another power play goal for us. So, you know, I think if you looked early in the year, the power play wasn't making a difference. I think last night it made a difference for us, along with, a great kill in the first period.
Lindy Ruff with us on the Wester Hotline. What about McLeod for that last night? He plays a career high in minutes, almost 24 minutes. And again, circumstance, there were some guys out, but he's been playing a more offensive role, or not even offensive, just more minutes this year with you than he had in Edmonton. And is last night kind of an example of when he's been getting more of a role that he's been producing?
Yeah, you know, I think when, you know, in Edmonton, obviously he's playing behind one of the best players in the game, and I think the opportunity is greater. I think it's been a little bit of an up-and-down year, but I think this last, 30 games, he's a guy that can skate forever. And obviously I had his brother in New Jersey. He was a great skater. They're similar when it comes to that. And I think he's really wrapped his arms around this opportunity to play more and get involved more. And his play has been real good for us. I actually didn't even look at his minutes. I knew he was fairly high, but when you're first off the bench killing penalties, and then, you know, you're elevated to that first power play unit, those guys are typically, 20-plus minutes a game. And because he skates so well, he handles those minutes pretty well.
Is he the first on your list, but one of the first on your list when you get to a 3-on-3 overtime because of skating? Like, how much does skating, just in general, like the determining factor for who you're putting out there in 3-on-3?
It really is. You've got to be able to skate. I think if you look at some of the best opportunities in three on three, it's because somebody outskated somebody. I think if you go back to the Vegas game, the first chance we gave up was because their Vegas guy outskated us up ice. And a lot of times, the other team will try to isolate that you've got two forwards out there. We'll try to isolate that one forward that, is back defending. And, our goal is to try to stay away from that, where don't really want my forward skating backwards because it's not their strong suit. So they got to kind of match speed going forward. And if you can't match speed, then, you get yourself in trouble. So I think almost every team, their go-to guys are their fastest guys on the team.
Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff. Lindy, there's a power play goal last night. Special teams has been something that's been, dogging this team for a lot this season. And, to get a couple power play goals, actually, that's one spot where I feel like if you're looking big picture, 5-on-5 scoring has been there most of the year. And if it comes down to special teams, things might be different for you. Is that, to you, maybe a positive sign, but also a place to start to show that the results can be better if that just turns around.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think if you go back to earlier in the year, there was a lot of games where even late in the game, let's say we got into the last 10 minutes, we've had a power play that, you know, could have made a difference, could have scored a goal that either would have tied the game or won the game for us. The disappointing part was we didn't get the job done. And I think there was a lot of cases early on even, too, where we gave up that shorthanded goal at an inopportune time that hurt us even than worse than not scoring. You know, it's something that we work on every day. You know, I think the units have been switching. We've changed our mentality a little bit with our penalty killing. We've worked on that now a lot more. I think if you look at the start of that game could have been different if Boston with the 5-on-4 and then the 5-on-3, you know, gets a goal. Then we're digging ourselves a little bit of a hole. So that was a big plus for us. I thought a couple of really big blocks. You know, penalty killing is a lot about being in shot lanes, being in the right place, getting your stick in the right place at the right time. And I thought, again, our guys did a good job last night with defending those first couple situations. And then, like we said, I think the power play has been a work in process all year, and maybe we're getting some dividends now. But it's an area that every team probably relies on to win a lot of hockey games.
Lindy, last night, Tage takes a hit from Zadorov and Greenway jumps right in. Saturday, Krebs did that same thing. And we had talked a lot about this with you after the Devils game with the Tage incident a little over a month ago. Do you feel like you've seen some growth in that department since we talked about that with you about a month ago?
For sure. You know, and I think that's maybe a little bit what Raz is talking about coming together. The instant message, the instant support for a teammate when something like that happens. What Greener did is the response we want to see. And the outcome of that, if we get an extra penalty or whatever happens, we'll kill that off. I think if you look at the Krebs play, I don't think we gave Vegas a shot on goal. And I think that when you're killing off a penalty of emotion, and that's an emotion penalty, it's a penalty for a teammate, a lot of times you kill those off. You don't kill off those lazy stick infractions. And I didn't like, I'll just say this right now, I didn't like the penalties we took. I didn't like the penalty we took to make it 5-on-3. That's not a penalty we can take as a team if we want to win hockey games on the road. The second penalty in the 5-on-4 last night. But the coming together and sticking up for us is something that the growth has been there. It's something that is a must on our hockey club.
What did you think of the Kulik hit, by the way? He does get hit in the head. I don't know if the player jumped or anything or left his feet, but still, it was a head. It was a shot to his head.
Yeah, it was a devastating hit, obviously. You know, I can argue any direction. You know, he's a defenseless player. I think it's... It has to be a little bit like football now, to be honest. I think they've done a great job in the NFL of protecting the receivers, of trying to protect the receivers from headshots. I believe that, you know, the first contact was his head. I think they would argue that, you know, he was kind of bent over. But I think we've got to protect our players better inside the game. And that is just my feeling, that our best players can't go down because you're in a defensive situation and somebody takes advantage of you. So I don't like it. We responded. You have to move on from it.
Lindy, would you support college hockey, his long head? Any contact to the head is a 2-minute penalty. Would you support that for the future of the NHL?
You know, I think in some form, I guess that's what I'm talking about, a headshot. That's the same as football now where, you know, you used to have devastating hits in football where receivers were opened up and we all thought there was an unbelievable hits, but we lost too many players. You know, when you can have players that can skate
I look at it this way. They can skate up to, you know, 23 miles an hour. I think our speed indicators last night would have been, our top guy would have been almost 23 miles an hour. And you get a guy going the other direction, you can imagine the damage that can be done on an impact. So in some form, I think that's exactly what we're talking about.
And with that, you know, what you're also talking about, I'm thinking back to your playing days, like you are putting the responsibility of the hit on the hitter. Like you, because that's what the NFL does, right? Like, who's responsible? It's the player that is delivering the hit that is responsible for where the contact happens.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly, you know, I think they've, for a while, there was that hit as you came around the net, the forward coming back. After that player, you know, moved the puck, a player would come in and lay a devastating hit on that player that really didn't have eyes on the attacking player. I think that's exactly what we're talking about, that the player that's delivering the hit has to be more responsible for where the contact is. I thought there was a hit later in the game that was really late, too. So I think there's two things there. It's the player delivering it. It's how long after the puck has left the stick that you want to allow these guys to, you know, to put a hit on an opposing player.
Lindy Ruff with us on the Wester Hotline. On Kulik, I don't know if you would have an update on him or Paterka or these other injured players, but are there any update on their statuses?
I do. Paterka had a great day. He argued with me yesterday about playing, which is great. But hadn't skated with the team and felt that didn't want this to be like a one off, that you jump in the lineup and then you're hurt again with the type of injury he had. So we put him through the paces yesterday after the morning skate. He had an unbelievable morning. He'll be ready for Utah for sure. With Kulik, he's still back in Buffalo. He's in concussion protocol. Doing okay. He'll be exercising again today. If things go well, you know, maybe later in the week he can join us. But we'll just have to wait and see.
And then on Josh Norris, he's been out of a couple games here too. Is there any different treatment for his status, given that he, like, injury was a part of his story before the trade? Is he being treated any more conservatively because of that history?
No. Okay. Not where, you know, we're treating him as normal. It was something that he previously dealt with. He's with us. So as he progresses, we hope he skates. So we're just trying to get him back into, you know, the right situation and get him back in the lineup.
Lindy, next up, Utah. And it's not a question we can ask all that often, but how does a pre-scout work for a building you've never played in? I mean, the team you could scout, but, you know, rinks have their little idiosyncrasies. Is there any sort of... kind of look into what Utah might be like?
Yeah, you know what? It is interesting. It's funny. I played in Utah in the International League when I after my stint in the American League. You know, interesting. It was an interesting place to go. But you're right about buildings. I mean, when you come to Boston here and you think about ripping a puck around the glass and you got the stanchions that it can hit and the different reactions in different buildings, how the puck reacts off the kickboards, and it'll be a building and we'll get in, practice in, and then, you know, probably morning skate to get a good feel for it. But great city to have a hockey team in.
Power feeds it down. Nice puck. Krebs scores! There's the shot. Lindy Ruff been calling for number 19. Byram. Back to McLeod, cross ice, there's a shot, scores! What a quick release that was! It's a great shot from Owen Power. 7 seconds to go in the power play, 14 in the period. Power shot, scores! Alex Tuck was in front of the net, and the Sabres in overtime with a power play goal win the St. Patrick's Day showdown, 3-2.
It's a Who Says No Tuesday. I'm going for 16-0 the rest of the way, which gets Buffalo to 92 points and still very much alive in the race. What do you say, Marty Baron? Welcome in to Sabres.
This is how you start the day. I was going to say happy
Sun
opening
is shining,
day.
Baby. Sun
do you know
is
who
shining.
Won the game this morning in Tokyo?
What?
the Dodgers and the Cubs played opening day baseball today in Tokyo this morning.
Why are you yelling? You sound distorted to me.
Am I? Okay, I'll turn it down.
Maybe I came in a little hot.
Well, you came in hot with the 16-0, so I get it. But do you know who won this morning, the baseball game?
I have no idea. I was otherwise detained this morning, as you know.
Okay, well, go Dodgers. I don't have a Dodgers hat.
Marty, was literally in the dark this morning.
I know, you were in the dark. You were surrounded by lights and darkness and all that. But anyway, I figured I'd just let people know, those that missed it, the Dodgers won 4-1 against the Cubbies this morning. So, and they have another game tomorrow morning early for those that, and then they'll
Who pitched? Resume.
I don't know. I just saw the score. I'm not going to dive deep into it. I have hockey on my mind right now. It's about hockey. It's about the NHL. It's about the Sabres. I just wanted to remind people, all of a sudden baseball has started. So let's go.
All right. Way to veer off of the main topic of, if you add, if they've won two in a row. If they make it 18 in a row, they're going to have a chance. That's all I'm saying. And
you know what? Listen. Much more than the results, I feel that
the
last two games.
Don't tell me about the process. I'm only results oriented.
No, it is. It is not the process. What I like is in the engagement. The engagement, yeah. Because you don't have Kulik, you don't have Paterka, you don't have Norris. The lines have looked in a way that we've never seen them all season long with the personnel that's being moved around. Guys are getting called up. I saw Brett Murray in the third period yesterday drive the net. And it's like, Big Murr has looked better in this one game than the games that I've seen him play with the Sabres in the past few years.
He had that slot opportunity where he put himself available and it just didn't connect on the pass from below the goal line. But it was exactly where he needs to be. You're right. We don't see that very often. And let me throw multiple bouquets your way. I don't think you've ever been more closely aligned in a prediction with who you wanted to see, who's got the most to gain / prove in the remaining games, who's playing up in the lineup. You didn't hesitate last night on the pregame. Peyton Krebs. Pretty impactful game from Peyton Krebs.
Very impactful game. And look, this was, that line that Krebs was on, obviously, with Murr and Quinn. Like, they needed to be good. Now, I get it. This is a power play goal that Peyton Krebs scored on a nice feed by Jack Quinn. But I think 5-on-5, they held their own. And then Boston is not a great team. Boston has got some very, very deep issues, especially when it comes to their players group. I think their goaltending, Swayman and Corpusello, could be good moving forward. But on defense, like, Zadorov was really good for them. Physical, you have to expect that. But other than that, like, they've got some issues. But the Sabres... So against Vegas, they needed a physical, emotional response. They got a break when Hurdle did not shoot it in the empty net, but they took advantage of that break. They took advantage with Dahlin scoring late and then winning it in a shootout. Yesterday's game was different. Yesterday's game was, well, Boston is not going to have 35 shots in the game. We know how Boston plays the game. Mm-hmm. And Boston protects the middle of the ice really, really well in front of their goaltender. So you're going to have to find other ways to create offensively. Not that the Sabres created a ton of chances, but enough. So much so that Corpusello made a few big saves. And then they were patient enough to not just throw the plan out the window, right? That's the engagement I'm talking about. Like, early in the season, it's like, this is a boring hockey game. Nothing's happening. Let's throw the plan out the window and let's improvise. And then they lose the game. They stuck with the plan, and the overtime was crazy, but crazy enough to create a power play for Tuck to tip it in.
And just to validate my claim earlier that if they finish the year on an 18-game winning streak to get to 92 points, this would force the Rangers to go 10-4 down the stretch just to get to 92. Probably not happening. Montreal would need to go 10-5-1 to get to 92. Probably not happening after how hot they've been. Detroit would need to go 11-4 just to get to 92, and so too would Columbus. So 18-0 to finish the year would definitely keep them very much in the mix.
I still think 92, look, you mentioned those teams, Montreal, the Rangers, Detroit, and Columbus, what they need to to accomplish down the stretch to get to 92. We're not including Ottawa in there because Ottawa's way above. Ottawa's, yep. You know, they're soaring. They've got a big game against Montreal tonight. That's going to be fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But, Montreal, the Rangers, Detroit, Columbus, they're all fighting for that last playoff spot. Mm-hmm. And right now, the Rangers are it. The Rangers, if they were to play four games over, I think it would get them to 90.
I just said if they go 10, yeah, but if they go 10-4, they get to 92. But I don't think they're going 10-4.
That's going to be tough.
Could 8-6 only gets them to 88.
9-5
right
would get them to 90. Right, so 9-5 is realistic for the Rangers. 90 is realistic. So you say 16-0 for the Sabres, 15-1
would
do it.
Well, it would be 18 because they've won two in a row.
Yeah, but the rest, the next 16, right? Like 15-1 could also get them to a battle. So I'm gonna stay positive with you on that one.
I reeled you in. I'm enjoying the sun. Tomorrow's gonna be even warmer, and then of course the wheels fall off because it's still March here in Buffalo. But whatever, just embrace the sunshine.
The wheels fall off.
Weather-wise.
Please keep your wheels on your vehicle.
As a meteorologist by trade, yes. I'm reminding you where we live and where we are at on the calendar. Beyond your love going into last night, and I say that, you know, in the sense of just who you were focused on and having it turn out to be a nice night for Krebs. What else, other than the engagement, like, or who else is a takeaway from last night? Whether it's a building block to close the year or a catalyst to close the year here. What are you seeing now within this group that might have Peterka back on Thursday against Utah, sent Roseanne back to Rochester today, has kept Brett Murray on the roster right now, Josh Norris on the trip, Yuri Kulik, At home in Buffalo. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot to discuss here, but I want to know where your focus is today.
So my focus after last night driving home from the studio was, it started with Owen Power. And Owen Power had a goal and two assists. He factored in every goal, played well. And I felt like Owen Power was moving. Even when Pasternak got on a breakaway, who is the guy that was like just skating behind him and got his stick, just a little bit of his stick at the very end. It was Owen Power. You're going to make mistakes on the ice, and a guy like David Pastrnak is going to find opportunities, but can you battle? Again, the engagement. Can you stay engaged in everything that you do? Mm-hmm. And I felt like Power was that guy last night. So when I looked at the defense, like the way the defense was constructed, I'm thinking like, I'd really like to see Dahlin with Byram for the rest of the year, because I would like it if that D pairing was your top D pairing starting game one next year, right? And then all of a sudden, maybe you have Power with somebody else. Like, who is that going to be? I don't like Power and Samuelson. It hasn't really worked. Who's that going to be? But the way the Sabres have constructed their defense here the last, couple of games is Dahlin on one pair, Byram on one pair, and Power on another pair. It's like, let's put our top three guys on three different pairs, make sure we have one of those guys on the ice at all time. And look, Bo Byram and Bryson have worked out really well. I think Byram is kind of letting himself free, right? He's skating everywhere. He's active in the offensive zone.
But he was with Raz, too.
He was with Raz, but now he didn't take a step back saying, hey, I'm not with Dahlin now. I have to be careful in what I'm doing. No, he stayed himself playing with Jacob Bryson. And so having Dahlin, Bryson, and Power on three different defense pairing, I didn't really think it was going to work, but I like the way that it's responded, because everybody has had a hand in, look, Dahlin scores late in the game. Bryson and Byram hit McLeod for that 2-1 goal against Vegas. Power yesterday. It just, everybody seems to be having a hand into what's going on here. It's not just focusing on one defensive pairing.
All that being said, you're not anticipating for opening night next year that the group of six looks as you're talking about it here.
No, I'm not. And look, that It's hard to speculate on it, Duffer, just because of the way that the contracts are organized, right? So you're looking at the Sabres and you're looking at the blue line. Well, okay, so Dahlin has his deal. Power has his deal. Samuelson has his deal. Byram, it's a question mark. Connor Clifton will still be under contract, right? So, and we haven't seen Bernard Docker yet. Bernard Docker somebody that, as an RFA this summer, is somebody that the Sabres want to move forward with?
Right.
I don't know that we insert Bernard Docker into the lineup right now, but maybe over the weekend they play back-to-back. Maybe that's where he sees his first activity in being Minnesota, Winnipeg, Saturday and Sunday.
I don't want to test your memory bank too much or mine, but because you laid out the defense the way you did and having your big three separated on all pairings, it sounds like other teams historically don't do that, right? Like you would have all three of them in the top four, if my memory is serving correctly. Now,
that's the blueprint. That's always been the blueprint around the NHL, yes.
I know that's why I didn't want to go down this path too much. And hey, I would gladly take input from people who are thinking of you know, teams that have it laid out differently. Hit us up at Sabres Live. Like I would be appreciative of that. I'm trying to think like Vegas has such a deep defense core.
Yes.
You could easily have three significant defensemen over the course of the three pairs because they've got like four or five guys that are really, really good,
you know,
in that group. But I also often gravitate to really memorable teams as they were constructed. And the 07 Ducks just constantly used Niedermeyer, Pronger, Beauchemin all the time. But they were in the top four in the group.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's
And even now, you look around the league, like let's, take a team that has, I'm just looking right now. Okay, and the Washington Capitals, right? Their top three pairs are Chychrun, Carlson, and Sandin.
Let me just say this. There's nobody else that has three defensemen that are going to get 40 points.
No.
That's where Buffalo is the exception here, and that's why I'm projecting it the way I am. So you can, go off on Washington or whoever here. It's just kind of like a lot of
most people have a top pair. They don't even have a top three. They have a top pair. That's the way it goes. Like, you know, Winnipeg has Morrissey and DeMello. That's their top pair. Then after that, it's your second and third pairing, and it's whatever. That could be interchangeable. But having three, like the Sabres do with Dahlin, Power, Byram.
Yeah.
Look, I've been critical of Owen Power this year. I think everybody has. There's been moments where it's not looked like, hey, is he going the right direction? Mm-hmm. Well, last night is one of those flashes that tells you if Owen Power plays like he did last night, there's no issue here. Because then you'd have Dahlin, who's been so good. You have Power, and then you have Byram, and that's probably in that order. Despite the fact that Byram has been really good, he'd probably slide in as a number three for me if Power plays the way that he played last night. There's still some improvement to be done, and it was Boston, and Boston is a team that maybe is not the fastest, at coverage, and the Sabres were at times slow to make the right play, but I think they found the right plays often enough, and Power was at the, involved on every one of those.
Mm-hmm. And 2 for 4 on the power play, which we have not said often enough. It was a grind fest through the course of 5-on-5 play last night. It was nothing to write home about. It was not particularly entertaining. But those are the games you have to win based on special teams. You have to. And they did. They had 2 power play goals. Boston had none, despite a 5-on-3. And that's how you win in all of this. So,
and you win with your often you're going to win with your top players on the power play performing. The way the Sabres won yesterday is with, even on the 4-on-3 in overtime, it's Peyton Krebs and Jack Quinn on the power play. It's stuck in front of the net. It wasn't Dahlin, Thompson, Zucker, those guys that you would think are the top power play guys. Mm. But you get a chance. Again, Peyton Krebs gets an opportunity to be on the power play. Take advantage of it, right? Owen Power got an opportunity to be involved in more power play time because that unit was having a little bit more success. Take advantage of it. I think that's as simple as you can get.
Yeah, and again, going back to how you talked about the three big names in on separate pairings, this is all because of what lays ahead for Byram. And yeah. The assumption of contractually where he will likely end up. And then I would ask all that are involved in this show today, listening or producing or talking, like, find me another team that's going to have three defensemen making that much money, right?
Yeah, it would be hard to find.
This is real, and this may be unique, and this is why we're talking about it with Buffalo and how it can be a good thing or, as sports often dictates, I'm not sure I want to do it that way, right? That's just the reality they're in right now.
And you're right, and the cap's going to go up. You've got Thompson locked in for long term, and if Tage can score 40 or more every year of that contract at just $7 million, it's like...
Norris locked in.
Norris is locked in.
Is the highest paid forward, by the way.
Tuck is going to be coming up here, and I get it, and Alex Tuck is looking at another 30-goal season. Mm-hmm. So, but... You know, maybe you're looking at Alex Tuck in the summertime because you'll be able to extend him starting July 1st. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're like, okay, let's lock pieces in right now because we know that we have to manage our payroll, but the cap's going to continue to go up. And if the cap continues to go up, we're going to have money to spend and be able to find more players to be able to complement that group, right? And so you have Greenway for a couple of years, you have Zucker for a couple of years, like you have those guys locked up, it makes a difference. So it's going to be an interesting summer, and most people think it's going to be a very busy summer for Kevin Adams and the hockey department, because you're going to have to make changes to that group that, despite where they are in the Eastern Conference, could be in a battle for a playoff spot if it just wasn't from that 13-game losing streak, right, and be able to get closer. But, yeah, there's going to be some changes.
You're never going to be able to run from the 13-game streak. But I would say this. This is recency bias, harder to accept was the 6-game losing streak coming out of Four Nations that started with a loss in Nashville, which shouldn't have happened based on how bad Nashville was at the time. And then they came out of it and they've been trying to dig themselves out of you know, that window, unfortunately. You know, they, correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't immediately after they won the first two out of Four Nations and then went on the slide. So anyway, it's just once you have the 13-gamer on your ledger, you can't have another 6-gamer.
And two of those games are against the Canadiens, who are like borderline a playoffs team right now. And maybe that would make a difference if you were in that position. The only one point, only one of those games did you go to overtime against Montreal, and that was it.
Who are the hottest teams in the NHL post Four Nations tournament?
Okay, so I am going to say...
Based on points percentage.
Points percentage. The Ottawa Senators?
They're number four.
Okay, the Ottawa Senators are number four. I'd like to think that are the Montreal Canadiens up
number
there?
Number one.
They are?
Yes.
Okay. You know who's been hot is the Carolina Hurricanes have been hot.
They are number five.
They're five, okay. What about the Winnipeg Jets?
They are number seven.
Jeez, I can't get the top guys. How about the St. Louis Blues?
They're number three.
Okay, I'm getting closer. How about the...
It was either this or Panthers. Ask me anything. So I'm,
no,
I'm
how about the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Lightning are sixth.
Okay, so I'm missing what? Number two?
Number two, number eight, and number nine.
Okay, so...
And there's a reason I stopped at nine.
I don't know.
Number two is Colorado.
Oh, should have said Colorado.
Number eight is Dallas.
Yeah.
And number nine is Washington.
Okay.
And the reason I put the Caps in there is because I wouldn't stop talking about it during the Four Nations break, that the team that's going to be most benefited by this tournament is the zero participant Washington Capitals in the Four Nations. They've done pretty well. They've gone 8-4 out of the break. So I would say they've held their own based on the remarkable season that they're having. But we're just seeing Montreal vault into the mix and St. Louis vault into the mix. And the same goes for Ottawa and to a certain extent, Tampa, based on a little bit of teetering that they had there. And now this leads into the next question. Who wins the Atlantic? Because right now, after last night, it's 85 for Florida, and the absence of Ekblad is in full effect. They've dropped 3 of 4, combined with, of course, missing Matthew Tkachuk. Mm-hmm. Tampa won again last night. They have 83. Toronto won last night. They have 83. Three teams separated by 2 points, and the Chasers, the Lightning and the Leafs, have a game in hand on Florida. This is wild. The Panthers and Leafs will play head-to-head 2 more times this year, and the Lightning will play each of the Panthers and Leafs once. So who wins the Atlantic?
Okay, so I am going to say the Toronto Maple Leafs will. And the reason why I'm going to say that is I feel like the Florida Panthers, dealing with Tkachuk injury, the Ekblad suspension, it doesn't help their roster. Like, they have a great top line and Barkov and Reinhardt on that line. But then you go to the second line, you have Sam Bennett there. And who else is there? Evan Rodriguez. Like, there's something missing. Something that Tampa and Toronto have right now. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Tampa, to me, have been almost like this inconsistent, beautiful thing. Like, they are so hot. And Vasilevskiy is so good. And then when we saw them against the Sabres, Vasilevskiy was so bad, and Tampa still end up winning. Like, they're very, like,
the Lightning
hot
are
and cold.
Art. Huh? The Lightning are a piece of art.
Yeah. They're a beautiful mess.
Yeah. It could be a masterpiece. It could be a dog's breakfast. But just keep staring at it. And I think the pieces are still there, where you can project, you know what, they could still be really great at the end of the day.
Yes, and I look at strength of schedule right now, and out of those three teams, Toronto has the easiest strength of schedule remaining. So I'm going to say Toronto would probably win the Atlantic, which would be great because we would most likely see a Battle of Florida between Tampa and the Florida Panthers in the first round, which I want marquee matchups. I don't care when they happen. I want the marquee matchup. I want, you know, Colorado-Dallas. I want Tampa-Florida. I'd like to see, you know, Toronto-Montreal or Toronto-Ottawa.
I was going to say, it right now, give it a little more time based on how hot Montreal is, but 2-7 is what it would be, which right now would be Toronto-Ottawa if the Leafs vault to number one in the Atlantic. Right now, that's not the case, obviously. But
and then Washington's going to get the second wild card team. So one of the Rangers, I'd like to see Washington Rangers. I mean, I played for the Rangers and we played against the Washington Capitals a couple of times in the playoffs. We go back to Ovi playing against Lundqvist back then. Like, I would love to see it. I think that would be a great matchup. Washington, New York, Battle of Florida, Battle of Ontario. You know, that leaves you Carolina, New Jersey, which nobody would be watching.
Are you kidding me? The historical reel based on past series between the Canes and Devils.
You see Jokinen with the Caniacs, right? The Caniacs that scored.
Eric Staal. Oh, my God. Like, I would guarantee you that there's more playoff history between Carolina and New Jersey than any of the other matchups that are currently in place. Now, if it gets to Toronto-Ottawa, there's obviously the 20 years ago Battle of Ontario. But you know what I mean? Like, this Carolina,
the big
Jersey
Irishman
thing,
and Pat Quinn against, Patty Laleem and the Ottawa Senator.
Who would be the most prominent vocal booster among all media of Carolina, New Jersey?
Carolina, New Jersey.
Weeksy.
Oh, yeah, because he's been, on both, yes. Kevin Weeks. But you know what? Go back and Google, for those that don't know, like, that rivalry and maybe never paid attention. The Hurricanes beat the Devils in the playoffs of 1 year by scoring like in the last minute of game six and game seven. And, you know, it was going to go to overtime. And then UC Jokinen took a shot that beat Brodeur. And you're like, what happened
here?
One of the games,
Carolina ripped it from the Devils with two in regulation.
Yeah, in the last
final minute and a half.
Yeah.
It was like, what just happened? Yeah, it's amazing. So good for them. I think any matchup is amazing.
It's Paul Hamilton.
I just love this reggae music. It's my favorite of all time. I wish they would just play this on autopilot, never turn it off. It's just so great. I love it so much.
He keeps the people coming back for more.
Super excited. And I might just add this. I've missed Paul Hamilton, and that's the reason I'm back.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
We had some fun an hour ago, thanks to Sneaky Joe, who, as on the occasion of the Sabres playing in for them a new arena tonight, an arena for the first time, the Delta Center in Utah, Joe went ahead, how's this, and looked up every facility they've ever played in, the Sabres. If you want to hear us marvel at that, to put it one way, on the Odyssey app from an hour ago is when it came up. And then he, at the same time, tweeted a spreadsheet with every arena name, city, opponent, years, and the Sabres record listed alphabetically, starting with the Arco Arena in Sacramento in a season where the league put teams in like non-NHL markets to maybe test them. So the Sabres played a game against Pittsburgh in November of 93 in Sacramento, California. They lost, and it's all right here. You can find it on Twitter, what Joe tweeted out. And I was thinking, here's Paul joining us now on the West Her Hotline. Paul, you would not have all 82 of these, but, I mean, you would have most, right? Although the like, arenas in the 70s and 80s, I mean, you could have been there on your own, but, you know, some of the Rockies and places like that, I don't know if you would ever have gotten there necessarily.
Yeah, no, I never really started traveling till the mid-90s, so... That's where it would have started.
Right. And that's by around then, the league was starting to, like, new buildings were, the Sabres building, a part of it, 96.
So, right. That's like, right around the time when a lot of the changes were, like, Montreal, Boston, Toronto was 99. So, how do you have, like, a favorite that you went to of the buildings that are not around anymore, maybe? Other than the odd?
Forum in Montreal, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was pretty cool. Boston Garden was pretty cool. So I think those two would be
Ever get to any of the older ones in Western Canada? Edmonton, maybe. Like that building last year.
Northlands Coliseum.
Northlands Coliseum. I was at the Corral for a practice, not a game, in Calgary.
Is that right? Okay. We liked that one. We liked that one.
Right.
The Stampede Corral.
Yeah, but I never saw a game there. And, yeah, so that's...
Yep.
And then Winnipeg is just, you know, they're newer building right now.
Replacing the Winnipeg Arena. You would have gotten to the Winnipeg Arena. What was that like?
No.
You never? Didn't get there? No.
Mm-mm.
By the time you started traveling, when did they move?
Oh, that's 96.
Yeah, they left and then they came back and they had the new place. So
Atlanta.
Yeah.
All right. Atlanta, I was at where the Thrashers played.
Yep. It's a great list. Anybody wants to look at this, right. Find it from Joe on Twitter. Really cool. Including, of course, a couple of stadiums. And Hamilton, Paul. Paul Hamilton. The Sabres played a couple of games in Hamilton in the 90s. And then also, as Bulldog reminded me, I wasn't thinking of it,
an
outdoor game there.
Right. Yep.
Outdoor game there, and I was covering the series that Mario Lemieux scored that iconic goal in Hamilton.
Yes.
With Gretzky and Lemieux, and Hawerchuk won the draw. Murphy was with them on the rush. And that probably is the most excited and loudest I have ever been in the building was when that goal went in.
87, I think, for that.
Yep.
So tonight, the Delta Center in Utah, Sabres and Hockey Club coming up with pregame at 8. We won't be here for the pregame show for the game tonight, so we wanted to fit you in here earlier. And the Sabres have won their last couple, the game in Boston. right? After mm-hmm. the win against the Avs. Now, did they come home after Boston, Paul?
No.
Golden Knights.
They stayed overnight, then left in the morning, and went to Utah after that, then practiced on Wednesday and have a game today.
What do you make, Paul, of them sort of leaning into finishing strong? I mean, I don't want them to just like, not try, obviously, but, you know, so much about our existence as fans and observers of this team, I'll include media for this point too, it's sort of repetitive and fatiguing. And we get to this part of the year, and I know, you know, we talked to you before the Boston game on pregame, but Lindy's talking about, you know, they're having conversations about how to be a team and, you know, being a good teammate on and off the ice, and you don't all be friends, you know. Lindy makes a point about all these years in, and not everyone's going to like one another on the team, but you got 3 hours you're on the ice in a game, you know, you better have everybody's back and all that kind of talk, and whatever the results will be from here to the finish line, I feel like every year we get some version of, you know, well, we're trying to figure out, you know, who we can be and what we can be, and I don't know. Like, on one hand, I want to respect them leaning into putting forth an effort here. On the other, it's irrelevant to what they're going to look like in October, as far as I'm concerned, because it'll be a whole new season where the standings will once again be relevant, and I feel like we've seen this team fold under that numerous times.
Yeah, well, it's all they've got.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all they've got to look at, to be quite honest. You know, they're not going to make the playoffs, so, you know, all they can do is sit there and talk about, you know, becoming the team that Lindy Ruff wanted them to be that they never were. And, you know, so, you know, it's
right.
really all they have to talk about. They don't yeah. have anything else to talk about. It's a shame that it took, you know, Thompson to be laying on the ice and everybody standing there watching to, you know, for them to start maybe coming together as a team. And that's what Lindy Ruff talked about, is not only that, you know, that they're all at the scrums now and they're all there for each other. And, you know, when he talked about you don't always like your teammate, but you better be there for him because that's what makes a good teammate. But he also talked about, yeah, they're there to back each other up in the scrums, but they need to be there to back each other up on the ice too. And he used mm-hmm. a play by Krebs,
yeah.
you know, where Krebs really busted it to get back to break up a 2-on-1 after there was a bad giveaway. And he said, that's a teammate. He goes, you know, the teammate made a bad play. He was there to get back. He hustled as hard as he could, and he helped bail that teammate out. He goes, that's what I'm talking about. He goes, if guys are doing that, he goes, then you've got the starting of a real team.
Yeah. Funny enough, you mentioned Krebs. Mike and I talked about him briefly. I don't think it was during your portion of our show on Monday before that Bruins game. But he, is there more there or what? Like, what is he? What could he be? And I said something to the effect of, I think this is who he is. I mean, there's skill in there, but I don't know if it's all gonna ever really come out. He's had opportunities on, you know, big, you know, more offensively minded lines with different teammates. Then he goes and snipes a power play goal.
Yep.
Right away, just like, oh man, I got the touch right here. I'm magic. What do you think about Krebs? Like, moving forward, is he just, in your eyes, what he's been so far, or do you think that there is still room for growth?
I think basically what you see is what you get offensively. He has had opportunity on some offensive lines. He, you know, came in. He was drafted as a gifted passer, and every now and then you see that. But, you know, it just he doesn't seem to click for him. I mean, if you're asking me as a number one pick, I don't see it. I would say it's a bust. But as a useful NHL player that you can use in your bottom six and you know, is going to give you everything he has and is going to help you that way, yeah. You know, I think of when I'm talking about that, I think of Zemgus Girgensons, who to me is a bust, but he's played a long time in the league, and he's a bust as a number one pick. I don't think he's a total bust as an NHL
right.
player.
He's had a nice career. Yeah.
Right, he's had a nice career. He's just a bust as a number one pick, and I think that's where I land with Krebs.
Paul Hamilton on the West Her hotline.
As far as you know, Paul, does Krebs embrace that, or is he a guy? I mean, I think I know the answer. I think his play, the way his style of play, how he's adapted, I think maybe tells the story. The thing you mentioned earlier about Lindy mentioning him busting it to get back on the 2-on-1, always being willing to jump in for teammates, or even just sometimes having a screw loose enough to want to just fight somebody just for the hell of it. He's kind of that guy. I feel like he maybe is a guy, and this can be a struggle for number one picks, guys that, you know, scored 100 points or whatever in junior and end up being role players in the NHL. Do you know different? Like, is he someone who feels like he hasn't gotten the chance, or do you think he embraces what he's got?
Both. I think he feels he could get a better chance to show what he, you know, he would probably say he hasn't had enough chance with guys who have that kind of talent. So I think he would feel that he still has that offense in him and has the opportunity to do it. But I think he has also embraced the rest of it. He knew in order to be an NHL player, he had to improve his defense. It wasn't good when he came into the league. Mm-hmm. And he did that and, you know, used what he had to do that. And one of the things he did is become a little bit of a pain in the rear end. You know, and sit there and he yaks at people, and he's not afraid. I mean, he wasn't, you know, when they were having a problem after, you know, you had Thompson laying on the ice, Peyton Krebs wasn't your problem.
No.
You know, Dennis Gilbert wasn't your problem. There were a lot of other problems hanging around that locker room, but it wasn't those two. I mean, those two would always be there for a teammate no matter what.
Paul, what is the status with Josh Norris? Like, is he played and then he went out, and I've heard sort of what to me is kind of like mixed messages on, was he hurt coming in? I know part of his story has been the shoulder injuries. What's the timeline of all this?
Well, I think, you know, Kevin Adams was talking to you guys about, you know, how they went about it with doctors. Mm-hmm. And where Ottawa's doctor and Buffalo's doctor actually conversed, you know, and he told you guys that that is normal. You know, when you get to that point of a trade, then they will show you medical records and they will let you talk to the doctor. So with that in mind, I would say that the Sabres probably knew about this, you know, when the trade was made, because they had said that it's something that he had been dealing with. He hadn't been here that long. So I would guess that it's something they knew about and, all right, well,
we're willing to inherit anyway, it.
Thinking that it's going to get better whenever.
Is he back tonight? Do we know?
No, he's not. I know he didn't practice yesterday,
but so, he's on the trip though. Right?
He's on the trip.
Yeah.
So Lindy, I watched the interview from yesterday and he said something like, it's not going as quickly as we wanted it to, kind of the same words he used for Zucker.
Yep.
But he is there. He's hoping to get him on the ice by the end of the week. Well, that would be tomorrow. You know, that's the end of the week. But he didn't really say, you know, when he would be ready for a game.
Okay.
Kulik's not even there.
Right.
I mean, he's in concussion protocol, and from what I heard yesterday, Paterka will play tonight.
All right. Well, what do you think of Utah as an NHL destination, Paul?
Got to get there first.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, tough question to ask you. You're not on this trip.
Hoping to get there next year and kind of check it out. So everything I read is pretty good. But, you know, I was, you know, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it seems like the fans have taken to it. But, again, I can't really say I haven't been there.
Oh, yeah, I know what I wanted to ask you about. Stupid Utah question.
Bryson.
Bryson, right. I don't know, like, he's their seventh or eighth defenseman. Like, did that need to happen? I mean, he's fine as a depth piece to me. I don't know if you view him differently. But I just, I don't know. Another year of Bryce. I've got a tweet from the Sabres. I don't know. But I don't.
Well, if he's willing to agree to the deal. That's fine. But, yeah, you're right. He's got to be your seventh or eighth defenseman. I mean, they have to become better defensively. And I'm not blaming him at all, actually. I think he's been fine. He hasn't bothered me playing D.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I do like about him is he keeps himself ready. He can sit for 3-4 weeks. And be ready to play when they call upon him. And that's what they need out of him. I don't think they need him in their top six. But, you know, if you got an injury to your top six, there's not many guys that can do what he does and keep himself ready like that and can sit for three, four weeks and jump right into the lineup and play at a high level. So that's how what I would be looking at. And it doesn't make any difference to me if they sign him now or this summer or whatever. If he's willing to agree to the deal, which is the same deal he had last year, fine, do it. I mean, but let's not force him into a role that, I mean, they need to revamp their defense, whether it's defensive play or, you
new
know,
players.
On defense. It's not they're not getting it done. I mean, Lindy Ruff talked about, you know, the defense has to be better. It's non-negotiable. Well, it was negotiable with the players because it hasn't. It's gotten worse than last year. They're worse defensively than they were last year. So changes need to be made.
Paul, thanks. Enjoy the game.
No problem. Take care.
All right. It's our dude Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. His appearances here on WGR are brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide, and by Relax Honda. Relax. We got this.
I have an opinion on Utah being in the league. I've never been to Utah in my life, but I have an opinion about it.
All right.
I like it.
Good.
Arizona was what? Perennially doesn't draw, doesn't win. Goes hand in hand. They went to a college arena.
5,500 seats.
It was an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Always with ownership and the legislature in Phoenix trying to figure out, is there going to be a building? It was a perennial embarrassment. And, you know, you're a league. You don't want that. So we've got a great, maybe burgeoning market that has a pro sports
bright,
team
young
and an arena.
Ownership is very stable.
It's a great move. It's, of course, sad for the fans of the team that left, as it always is, but I think it's a great move.
That's okay. The commissioner is they're talking to Arizona again still.
Yeah, of course.
They cannot quit Arizona. I don't know what the allure is there. But that's making the rounds. I heard actually Joe's come up a lot today. Text Joe thank you for all the content today. But I heard he and Jer talking earlier today how the league is talking with maybe Houston, New Orleans, Atlanta's always sort of in the mix here too, even though they're two-time losers on this. I feel like there was another city that kind of surprised me, but I can't think of it now. But Arizona is always on the list. I don't know, Quebec City can't get a return phone call. They've got a building they built for them to play in, but it's just sitting there. Arizona, let's go back to Arizona and try to find a way that we can, we'll put an arena in, but it won't just be an arena. It'll be a entertainment hub with a casino and hotels and shopping and, oh my gosh. Just stop. It's Arizona.
I need you to stop.
Stop with Arizona.
You had your chance.
Anyway, I think Utah, I like Utah. I loved watching footage of the Sabres skating. They practiced at a facility that houses, I think it has an Olympic-sized hockey rink and an NHL-sized hockey rink inside of the Olympic speed skating oval. So I don't know if Lindy made them. The way I read it was he encouraged the guy. The Sabres went out in their gear for practice and did a loop on the speed skating oval. And I love speed skating.
Oh.
So I got a kick out of seeing them doing that. A few of them even I saw had the gloves off and the hands behind them doing the classic stride, which is hard to do on hockey skates because those speed skates have those much longer blades, but still it was really cool to watch.
It's like maybe the first – Eric Heiden is maybe the first athlete I ever tried to emulate. And it was that – he had a yellow 1980 speed skating Olympics at Lake Placid. Might have won five. He had a – yellow suit with the hood, right? And I didn't have like a pond per se, but we had like a big puddle that would freeze in the yard. And I would skate on this, you know, quote pond with one hand behind my back and swing the other arm and just,
I love
this. I don't know. It would take not 5 seconds to go all the way around.
Right.
without being fast, while being eight or nine.
Right, right.
Like, I'd just be out there right by the road, too. That's where the pond would sort of form, right out by the street. And I'd just be out there skating in circles, imagining, pretending to be Eric Heiden.
We had a stretch. There were places very close by we could walk to when we were kids to play on ponds and stuff. And it was really, really great. But my backyard, where my parents had a garden in the spring and summer, it was a little lower ground. And so water, I think it might even still do this, would like pool up from the yard behind ours. There was no fence. And water would pool up there. And it would be only about 3 feet wide, maybe, right? But it was the length of our backyard, which, you know, wasn't huge, but it was still, you know, you could get going full speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go out there with stupid little stick and gloves and my skates and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You couldn't even really handle a puck on it, but I'd be with my stick anyway just because I'm a hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I can remember skating on that strip and my mother looking out the windows in the backyard like, ah, boys.
Right. That might be it. That might be the... Yeah. The takeaway, ultimately. Just so in love with this spreadsheet that Joe just did. I think I've been to 22 of these places.
Wow, you counted already. I did not. I did not do that. I'm distracted by a minor crisis, which maybe I'll talk about. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was counting them in my head, walking around during the break, and now I'm looking at the list.
Yeah.
And not that many are for Sabres games. Like, I was at the Capitals arena for the NCAA tournament.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just going by, like, if I've set foot, I set foot in the Boston Garden. I met a friend there, but I never went to a game. Counting it, bam. It's two different lists. It's the ones where you've actually been inside, and then I'm not counting the Forum, because I drove past the Forum and was at a stoplight and looked at it. But it did not go.
Yeah, I'm not
going to
give you that. I don't even want to really give you the garden.
Well,
I mean, you didn't go to an event there?
No, I didn't go to anything. There was just to meet a friend.
Yeah.
Who was there. Didn't even really look into the bowl.
You weren't there then.
I was barely in there.
Yeah.
Barely.
That doesn't count. You've been to the new place, though, in Boston, right?
I have. For a Sabres game, for...
I have not been to the new place. I've been to the
Bandits.
I was at the garden, but I've not been to the new place.
Or it wasn't the Bandits. It was the Nighthawks. I did a lacrosse game there. Against Boston. Overtime game, by the way, Bulldog, before you ask. If the game was decided in regulation, it was not. Frank is with us. Hello, Frank.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thank you for calling.
No problem. So I'm just curious as to why we would re-sign Bryson after the past season. And then I saw a post by Joe Marino, and he said that he's got fingers crossed that we don't just roll it back next year and hope this wasn't a fluke. And as for a bad choice in the draft, I just hope we don't trade up with somebody in our own division that comes back to bite us. So I just want to hear your opinion.
Or conference, for that matter, like last year with Kansas City, not in our division. But, yeah, I heard somebody make that same point earlier today. I was listening to the morning show, and they used that same phrasing about the division with Kansas City. I'm like, they're not the division. They're in the conference. They're in our way, but it's not the division.
Anyway, it wasn't Frank?
No, I don't think it was Frank. I don't remember now, but anyway, maybe it was oddity that he would have said called us twice in the day, or that two different people would have made that same mistake. But anyway, Bryson, I don't know. We talked a little bit about it earlier, and I don't even care. Fine, he's your seventh or eighth defenseman. That's it. Okay, great. Move on. As far as what they're gonna do, I mean, I don't know that. It's possible they find another partner to make the kind of trade they just made with Cousins and Norris. It'd be nice if Norris could actually play more than a couple of games before missing time, which is the problem with him, which is definitely why Ottawa wanted to move him. But I assume that's why they wanted to move him. I shouldn't say definitely, because it could have been something else I don't know about. But he's had a tough injury ride, same shoulder, three surgeries, ouch. Don't know what's bothering him now, but maybe you can do that. But I'm always on guard at this time of the year for all the talk about we're coming together and everyone, we love each other and all that. I mean, there was plenty of we love each other early in the year. It just didn't really show up on the ice when guys were lying there bleeding and guys, players just ignored it. But that's improved. But all the talk at this time of the year makes me nuts. There's nothing at stake. I think it's one thing to play your best when, you know, you're just riding it out and you want to feel good going into the summer because, you know, you had maybe a good stretch run or something and everybody's coming together. It's another thing to do it when it really matters, when the standings still are relevant to your existence. And this team, I think year over year, has loosened up and played maybe their best hockey when it hasn't mattered. And conversely, has been pretty tight and prone to long losing skids that annihilate any hope you realistically have for the season when the stakes are big. So I don't know if that's going to change, but I understand why someone who follows the team or analyzes the team and talks about the team would say they're bracing for them to just run it back. Because, like you said when we were talking before Greenway and Zucker both resigned, if they do that, where are the spots that are available? And this came up again briefly earlier, and I said, well, a full year of Kulik is, you know, will be different. And he's been promising, although he's out with a concussion currently. Norris is a big add if he can get on the ice. There's always an if or a but. I don't know how much more you should expect them to do, especially if they finish strong. I don't think the GM is going to get fired. I don't think they would have let him make the Norris for Cousins trade if that were going to be the case. That can change. The owner can be temperamental about that. Maybe Kevin Adams will do something that offends him in the spring or summer, and they'll move on him. But I understand why you'd be worried about them just running it back.
Well, even this move with Bryson does more of that. It's just, why did it have to happen? I think the Sabres think they're making a bigger point that's important. Because of their own failures in messaging and also, more importantly, being attractive in the first place to their own players, to other players, like this whole thing. Adams, I think, at least in terms of the image of the Sabres, didn't help when he went into his palm trees thing, right? Like, so what they've done, and Adams, I would say, I appreciate that. When he's been on with us, like, he explains it, and he's done it honestly, and he's backed it up. He wanted to keep Greenway, and he wanted to keep Zucker, and it wasn't like necessarily obvious that they should do those things, and they did. So he wasn't just giving us a speech. And then Bryson is a version of this, too. It's all one more thing in the offseason that you can't do to change a team that is right now last in the conference and going for a 14th straight season without even making the playoffs. I mean, that's just incredible. And if I had that, and I didn't have this cloud over my head about whether I can attract players that I may have put there myself even, I would want the most flexibility I could have to make changes. And these moves each give you less and less. So right now they have one UFA, Reimer. That's it. They signed Zucker, they signed Greenway, Bryson was another one, and you've got a half dozen or so restricted free agents, like Paterka,
okay,
who will be interesting, and also Quinn, and I don't know what I want to do there. That also kind of came and went.
That's got to be... Paterka could be a big deal. Like, Paterka could qualify for some level of what they did with Thompson and Cousins. I don't know if it has to reach. Well, it might reach those numbers just because of, you know, inflation. Because he's not flashed to the extent that those guys had by that point when they got their deals. But I would understand wanting to lock him up. I think he's still got a lot of promise. Quinn.
People talk trades with him, though. Like, he's in the speculation.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what to make of that. You know, he would be an attractive piece. He you know, to me, and he doesn't even have, you know, the baggage of Cousins being a ghost for 2 years running. And you saw what you were able to get for him, although, again, it's not in the lineup, and who knows. But Paterka, you could do well, I think, if you can find the right match, right? It's got to be a guy that doesn't have no move. Like, it's the world is not your oyster in this situation. But he could be attractive. But I think if he gets re-signed, you're looking at, you know, $6-7 million a year, I think. And I think that's warranted with today's prices. Quinn, to me, has got to be like a bridge 1 or 2 year thing, because he just has not been the same player. He's been the same player he was, but it was such a short amount of time to even say that. But I think it's fair to wonder if he's ever going to be the player that you thought he was going to be because of the injuries. Those can be very hard to come back from. Maybe another offseason of training, he comes back here and hits it, and he looks more like the guy that showed so much promise. But we're a long ways from, oh, we're going to use all our cap room re-signing all of our guys. Like, he was prominent on that list when Adams made that point, I think. And I don't think he should figure into that at all.
Quinn.
Yeah.
Also, there's McLeod. 25, nice season. There's him.
He's an RFA coming up?
Yep.
Jeez, I was hoping he was under K. That's been a success story. He's been good for them.
Well, I've got 10 forwards under contract for next year already. Without McLeod, without Paterka, without Quinn, without anybody new. I've got five defensemen under contract for next year already, without Byram. I think signing Byram to what market rate would be a tremendous mistake. Maybe they can move Samuelson. He's not super expensive. He's locked up for 5 or 6 more years. 4.2. It's not great, but it's not, you know, gouge your eyes out.
That salary shouldn't be a horrendous. It's not horrendous. And that's the best I can do.
It's not horrendous. That's what I'm saying, too. And you've got Lukanen for 4 more years, and then presumably Levi, but that's one. Like, you have almost no openings, and that was part of the plan here with Zucker and Greenway and now Bryson. Like, this was what I think the Sabres felt like they needed to do. Individual players, sure, is always the argument you can make, but I think there was a bigger purpose to it.
Well,
and this is the result.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have almost no flexibility, relatively speaking, on a team finishing last.
Unless you can find trade partners, right. I have some sympathy for him and them. Again, like, they've made the situation, and I definitely think he made it worse with the palm trees and taxes news conference. I mean, that was just a horrible thing to put out yourself to get people talking about and thinking about within the league. Just awful. So that definitely hurts. But given where they're standing now, like, he can't go back in time and fix that. And nor can he change the outcome of the Eichel decision they made about the surgery and all the things that I think are hurting them from an image standpoint within the league, with players. So you've got guys who are willing to stay here that are veteran players. You go into the offseason, and you know they've been a certain level of decent for you, even though your results have not been good. They were. I like Greenway, and Zucker has been good. You let them go, there's no guarantee you can replace them with commensurate guys. So you don't know in free agency. You're probably going to get worse and maybe, who knows, pay more if you go into the marketplace with the reputation they've got. Again, that doesn't absolve them of the responsibility they have in creating the reputation in the first place, but he's got to work with what he can work with. And so I understand keeping those guys.